So before we begin, let's cultivate our motivation and consider why we're here. And so whatever was our initial reason for coming, let's build on that and think that we want to be here to discuss and learn so that we can improve ourselves, develop our talents, our good qualities, subdue our anger and greed, and to do all this so that we can make a positive contribution to society and to the lives of all of the living beings that we encounter directly or indirectly. So with a sense of interrelatedness with other beings and a sense of care and concern for their experiences, let's listen and learn today. Some of you, it's your first time, and some of you have been here many times. So it's a reminder to some and an introduction to others. But for the last, I don't know how long now, maybe 2 years, going on 3 years, we've been on the Sharing the Dharma Days, been going through the verses in this book, Don't Believe Everything You Think, which is a commentary on a poem written in Tibet many centuries ago that has all the key points of the path to awakening. And each of, there's 37 verses in the poem. We're on verse 27, so we're getting there. And the verses all end with the line, "This is the practice of bodhisattvas." So a bodhisattva is somebody who has impartial love and compassion for all living beings and an altruistic intention towards everybody. And so this is, the poem is explaining how these beings train their minds. In other words, how we can become somebody with impartial love and compassion for others and understanding of the nature of reality and so on. Okay, so the verse that we're on today has to do with developing fortitude and subduing our anger. So I know that none of you have a problem with anger. It's always the other people who are rude and inconsiderate who bug you. Yeah, and that by chance, whenever you do get angry, it's always their fault, right? Yeah, so I'm just teaching this so that you can learn it and tell it to all the people you don't like, you know, how they should practice and change their mind, okay? Yeah, and in the meantime, you can continue to feel sorry for yourself and be self-righteous, which I'm sure will make you exquisitely happy. Okay, so this verse, okay, it says, "To bodhisattvas who want a wealth of virtue, those who harm are like a precious treasure. Therefore, towards all, cultivate fortitude without hostility. This is the practice of bodhisattvas." Okay, so to bodhisattvas who want a wealth of virtue. Virtue meaning the positive energy that we create inside of ourselves from having constructive and positive mental states, from, you know, acting in ways that are beneficial to others, from speaking in ways that create peace and harmony. Okay, so for bodhisattvas, for beings, you know, with love and compassion who want to develop this a wealth, a treasure of positive energy within themselves, those who harm are like a precious treasure. Now, already we're saying, what? Those who harm are like a precious treasure. Excuse me, Tongwei Zhangpo. He's Tongwei Zhangpo, the author of the poem. Excuse me, Tongwei Zhangpo. You don't understand what enemies are. Yeah. Yeah. That you're saying people who harm me aren't my enemies. They're like a precious treasure. You got it all wrong. Yeah. This is what we think, isn't it? Yeah, people who harm me, they are my enemies. Yeah, and it is completely appropriate for me to get furious at them and to strike back in any way I possibly can to destroy them because they're harming me and mine. Yeah, that's the way we think, isn't it? Isn't it? Yeah. So, you know, as a country, when people do things we don't like, yeah, we bomb them. Yeah. As individuals, maybe we don't bomb the people in our family or in our workplace, but our mouth can be a weapon of mass destruction. And we can say all sorts of horrible things behind people's back that, you know, ruin their reputation and create problems for them. We can criticize them and humiliate them in their presence. Yeah. And when people do things we don't like, we feel completely legitimate in doing this, don't we? Yeah. And sometimes we come out feeling like, I stuck up for myself. I put them in their place. I'm vanquishing them. Or, you know, that's kind of more a macho approach. Yeah. Or another approach is, I got it. I got even at them, but I made it look like I wasn't involved. Yeah. That's the sneaky approach. Yeah. Do you know this? Either one of these approaches? You know? How to hurt somebody's feelings, but make it look like you're totally innocent. Or how to just get in there and slug them, and then say, I'm the victor. Okay, so it actually starts in kindergarten. Well, actually before that, you know? Yeah, when you're in the sandbox. Remember being in the sandbox? And one kid throws sand. And so what do? You know, you ask your mom and dad what to do. Yeah, one parent may say ignore it. Yeah, and you try that for a while, but you're really mad. And the other parent says, "Well, throw sand back at them." You try that, and then of course they throw more sand at you. Or another solution is you go tell the teacher on the, you know, who's patrolling the playground. But that person's usually too busy because there's all hell breaking loose on the playground. Yeah. But we're angry either way. You know, any of the ways of what we do, we're angry. And it's the anger, you know, that we have to work with, you know, inside. Because whether we take our anger out on others, whether we get our way or not, whether there's justice or not, still, the basic problem is our anger. Yeah, it's not so much really the justice in the situation. It's what do we do with our anger? And I say this, I'm going to go a little bit off topic now, but I have a friend who is she's an attorney for the federal government in criminal, capital cases. Yeah. And she says that, you know, because many states and the federal government have capital punishment, that when somebody has been murdered, the prosecutor usually encourages the victim's family to seek the death penalty and to, you know, really go for it. And she's noticed, because she's done this work for many, many years, that the prosecution will take the hurt of the family and the pain of the family and change it into anger, encourage them to be angry, use that anger to secure not only a conviction, but a death penalty retribution. The prosecution, you know, the family then goes before the media, they speak, you know, widely, a lot of attention gets paid to them. But my friend said, and the family goes to the execution as well. You know, they have they do capital cases. The family has a special room just for them. The media, the prison officials are in a different room to observe the execution. So the family, you know, is really paid a lot of attention to until the execution. When the execution is over, the prosecution, everybody dumps the family. Yeah. Because they have no use for them anymore, because they got their capital conviction and executed the guy. But the family is still left hurting. And the family is still left angry, because they were told to be angry. Yeah. And that the execution does not solve the grief of the family, as the prosecution and the public like to make it out to be. That once justice is secured, you know, and the family will talk like that right after the execution. Oh, now I can put it to rest. Justice has happened. But my friend has observed, no, it's not put to rest. The pain is there, the grief is there, the anger is still there. Okay. So that's why I said, you know, what we do in the confront of harm is, you know, that's one issue to deal with. But the real deeper issue is what to do with our pain and what to do with our anger. Yeah. Because those are the things that we have to heal whenever there's difficult situations. And I'm sure many of us feel angry about things that happened many, many years ago. Yeah. Do you still have some anger about things that happened many, many years ago? Even the other people, you're out of touch, or maybe they're no longer alive, but the anger is alive and well in your heart. Yeah, anger is painful. And yet we hold on to it with this sense of self-righteousness sometimes. Yeah. So this verse is about really looking at the anger, how to release the anger. Okay. So for these bodhisattvas, those who harm are like a precious treasure. That's not how we usually feel about our enemies. Yeah, they're anything but a precious treasure. Which is why the advice in each one of these verses is usually the opposite from how we normally react. Yeah. So how do we see someone who's harmed us as a precious treasure? It seems so counterintuitive. Yeah. Actually, yeah, it was talking about people who want to develop impartial love and compassion, people who want to build up in their own mental continuums a wealth of positive energy, yeah, that those people then practice to see their enemies as a precious treasure. Why? How? Because those people give us the opportunity to develop fortitude in our hearts. Okay? Not everyone gives us the opportunity to develop fortitude. Yeah? And by fortitude, I mean a mind that is strong, some kind of internal strength, a mind that can bear difficulties, can bear hardship, can bear grief and pain without freaking out with anger or self-pity. You know, some kind of inner strength that can deal with difficulties. And wouldn't it be wonderful to have that kind of inner strength? So that whenever there's a problem or whenever somebody harmed us, we didn't just collapse in a fit of sorrow or a fit of anger. Yeah. So for those of us who really want to develop this quality of fortitude, of inner strength, the people who harm us are like a special treasure because they give us the opportunity to do so. Okay? So, you know, when you want to develop this kind of quality, you need people to practice with. You only can practice with enemies. You can't practice with people who are kind to you. How are you going to develop fortitude and the ability to go through difficulties when everybody around you is kind? Yeah? When there's kindness, we just become complacent. You know? We just lap it up. We, you know, sometimes become quite mushy, you know, that we don't have this inner strength. But when there's difficulties, you know, then we develop fortitude. Or we either develop fortitude or we freak out. So, you know, there's two alternatives, two options. You know, we may have a habituation with one, but why not try the other one if it leads to more peace of mind? Yeah, because building up enemies doesn't lead to internal peace. Yeah, holding others as enemies on a personal level, on an international level, whatever it is, it doesn't lead to having a peaceful heart and mind. Yeah. Only when we relinquish our anger, our belligerence, our spite, you know, do we have internal peace. Okay, so these people who harm us are like the precious treasure because they give us the opportunity to practice fortitude. For the bodhisattvas too, because they want to develop this stockpile of virtue, beggars and people who need things, people who ask them to do favors, they're so happy. Yeah? When bodhisattvas hear somebody say, can you help me or give me something, you know, the bodhisattva goes, wow! I have the opportunity to be generous. I can make a difference in somebody's life. I can help someone. This is fantastic. Now, most of us, when people ask us for help, it's like, oh God, I wanted to rest today and now somebody needs my help. I wonder how I can get out of this. Okay, but you can see the difference if somebody's been training spiritually. They don't react that way. They react with, oh, good. Yeah. I get to give. And so similarly here, it's all good. Somebody's trying to harm me. Now I have the opportunity to really put my spiritual practice into practice and use it to change my mind and my heart and my life instead of just going blah, 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 blah. Yeah, yes, be kind to everybody. Yes, blah, 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 blah. Now I have the chance to really make that happen in my heart. Okay? And so that bodhisattva, the recommendation, you know, after seeing that person like as a precious treasure, therefore towards all, cultivate fortitude without hostility. Okay? So cultivating fortitude, you know, is cultivating this inner strength that doesn't take everything personally, that doesn't exaggerate the importance of what's happened to me, I, my, and mine. Yeah. Okay? So it's a mind that's much more balanced, that can bear things. And it's a mind without hostility. So fortitude doesn't mean that we put a clamp on our anger and stuff it down and then paint a smile on our face so that we can look like nice Buddhists. It's not like that. It's not about stuffing the anger. Okay? It's about completely changing our perspective on the situation so that there's no anger arising in us to start with. Okay? So, for a person, for example, who wants to be a painter, being invited to do an art show is this fantastic opportunity. Similarly, for a person who wants to develop virtue and wants to develop fortitude, obnoxious people who harm them create an incredible opportunity. Like I said, you can only practice with the people who harm us, not with the people who are kind to us. Yeah. So then, you know, we practice the different techniques to subdue our anger, you know, such as, in this case, you just practice thinking, my anger is my problem. And my anger is what makes me create a lot of non-virtue. My anger gets me into a lot of messes and jams in my life. So I want to develop fortitude and subdue my anger so I can be free of this mental affliction that just runs havoc in my life. Yeah. Do you think anger creates problems for you? I know other people's anger creates problems. Yeah, we all know that. But what about our own anger? Does it create problems for us? Yeah? Do you sometimes say and do the most obnoxious things when you're angry? Things that afterwards you feel like, you know, quite embarrassed about. So, you know, when we really have a sense of the faults of anger and hostility, now then we want to develop that inner strength. Okay? And so, for example, I mean, like I was saying, one way to do that is to not be so ego-sensitive to everything anybody says or does in relationship to us. Yeah. So somebody gives us some feedback that we don't want to hear, even if it's true. Or worse yet, they give us feedback that we consider not true. Yeah. And instead of just following that instant thing of, nobody can treat me like that, to just step back and it's like, you know, I really don't need to say take this so personally. It's simply this person's opinion. If there's something in their opinion that is true that I can learn from, then I should listen to it. If there's something in what they said that's incorrect, I need to explain to them to clarify the misunderstanding. But I don't need to feel like I'm under personal attack because somebody said this. It's simply the opinion of another person. Yeah. Why do we let people's opinions, you know, strike us to the core? It's because we usually take them like, well, if somebody says this about me, it must be true, and I don't want people to think this about me. First of all, I don't want to acknowledge I have faults. Second of all, I want to have a good reputation. And one of my rules of the universe is nobody is allowed to dislike me. Nobody is allowed to criticize me. Everybody must like me. Everybody must say good things about me. That's a rule of our own personal universe. Yeah. When is everybody in the world going to follow that rule? Yeah. When's that going to happen? Maybe that rule is a little bit impractical. Yeah. We talk about, you know, freedom a lot in this country. Well, maybe I need to give people freedom to think whatever they want about me. And some people will like me, and some people won't like me, and that's okay. Yeah. I don't need to lose my self-confidence over it if I'm acting in a way with integrity. If I'm acting ethically, I don't need to lose my self-confidence because somebody misunderstood something or somebody doesn't like what I did. Yeah? And so thinking in that way, then we develop our inner strength. Yeah? Because, lo and behold, much to our surprise, it's not all about us. You know? Whatever happens in the universe isn't about me. And lots of times when people criticize, when they say painful things, they are revealing much more about themselves and their states of mind than they are about us. Yeah. So instead of like, everything's about me, to look and say, you know, this person has some misunderstanding, or this person is sensitive about something, or whatever it is that's going on. And we don't have to get angry. You know, there are other ways to solve misunderstandings and conflict besides anger. Yeah, that's the point. Because we usually think anger is the only thing that's going to motivate us. It's not true. Okay. So when writing the book, I included some stories that are true stories. So I thought I would read some of these to you about how people applied this verse in their lives to help them. Okay. So actually, first in the chapter I tell one of my stories, but I think I told it already in this series, so I better not tell it again. Here's another story. Okay. So this person says, I'm not yet able to cultivate fortitude without hostility towards all. But I have learned that when I believe I have an enemy, I usually don't. For the most part, whenever I have perceived harm in my life, no one has actually been trying to harm me. That is, I might get angry and antagonistic, thinking that someone is deliberately trying to thwart my way or to sabotage my happiness. But in fact, no one actually has it out to get me. Yeah. Now, I don't know about you, but I find that very often the people I get angry at are the people who are trying to help me. The people I'm working with who are trying to help me in whatever project. But they aren't doing it the way I want them to. Yeah. So I say they're harming me. But actually, they're trying to help. It's just I have my criteria for what help has to be in this situation. And they haven't read my mind yet. So they don't know what it is, these stupid people. They should know by themselves. Okay, so let's here go along. Yeah, one of my friends, was his story. For example, I just don't get along with this one person I've known for a few years. I could never understand her motive or her method. Worse yet, my hostility arose in the context of our working together to plan Dharma events. So it could be planning a Dharma event, it could be in your workplace, you know, you're working together on a project. I would do my job, and she would come in and take over my job, and then accuse me of taking over someone else's job. I felt anger because she misunderstood me, and frustration because I couldn't understand what she was doing or thinking. In addition, I heard other people gossip about the situation. Most of them believed me and didn't side with her, so I had some arrogance thinking that I had one up on her. All this was ugly, especially because we were organizing Dharma teachings together. You know, let's organize a teaching on compassion and fight the whole time we're doing it. At some point, I realized this was an opportunity to practice and thought of this verse, which synthesizes all the points of the fortitude of voluntarily bearing suffering. Okay. By reflecting that conflict is natural in cyclic existence and that this situation is my own karmic creation, I replace the question why with why not. So you know how when things happen you have this horrible working relationship with somebody, you always say, why me? You know, why does it happen to me? Why couldn't it happen to some other person? Yeah. And so this person, he was learning, no, this is due to actions I've done in the past. So it's due to my own actions, my own karma. There's nothing to blame with anybody else. And so he started, instead of saying, why does this happen to me? He starts saying, well, why not? Yeah, why shouldn't it happen to me? Okay. So he says, now I say to myself, why not me? Why shouldn't this be happening to me? I also practice, in quotes, blaming the suffering on my own self-centered attitude that supported the creation of the destructive karma and supports my anger. Yeah. So he started seeing his own self-centered attitude as part of the problem in the situation. Yeah. Because why do we get angry? Because we're thinking principally of ourselves. And that makes us misunderstand things and blow things up out of proportion. I contemplate that the object of my anger is precious and useful so that I take the opportunity to transform the experience into a sincere Dharma practice. I'll also meditate on compassion for the enemy by remembering the faults of afflictions and karma and wanting to stop both of us from experiencing them. So seeing I'm under the influence of my mental afflictions and the bad deeds that I've done in the past, that's why I'm experiencing anger and pain right now. And this other person who is doing or saying whatever it is I don't like, they're also under the influence of their mental afflictions, their jealousy and arrogant and clinging attachment and ignorance. And they're also under the influence of their karma created in previous times. Yeah. So it's not like either of us, you know, really wants to create headaches for the other. It's just that we're both so conditioned by having a mind that's full of afflictions that we say and do all sorts of stupidagios. Okay, and so this person then generated the thought, you know, may this other person and me too be free from our mental afflictions and the force of our negative karmic actions. Recognizing the helplessness of the other person in that they are under the influence of their afflictions is also helpful. We stop getting angry then. Of course, generating forgiveness from the depths of my heart and extending it out to all sentient beings is healing as well. Okay? So here they just went through, in one sentence each, many different antidotes, many different ways to think to subdue the anger. Having applied these methods to that situation, today I recognize the things that used to drive me crazy and make me so angry, and they do not have the same power over me. I can make space inside my mind so that I am able to trust that the other person's underlying motivation is good, even if it gets distorted in the process of acting, or even if my mind views it in a distorted way. Nowadays, my relationship with this person has completely changed. She is one of the most generous people I know, and my respect for that quality in her has grown. I am grateful to have had the teachings on fortitude and the brevity of this verse that reminds me that those who harm are like a precious treasure. Okay? So that's the way one person handled the situation. Okay, I want to read you this other story. Yeah. Which actually took place in Coeur d'Alene. A friend from Coeur d'Alene told me this story. So she said, last weekend, while I was teaching a class at some friend's yoga studio, which was attached to their home, an amazing drama unfolded. Okay, so the home, the yoga studio is like right next to their home. A young man with a drug addiction was in the class, and throughout the weekend, he stole jewelry from my friends. He went in their house next door and stole the jewelry. I had an uneasy feeling on the last day, and checking his sweatshirt, which was out in the entryway, I found some of the jewelry in his pocket. We discovered more after I confronted him. When I found it, I knew I wasn't going to let him steal it. Even though I'm not confrontational by nature, in fact, I tend to let things pass because it is uncomfortable to talk to people directly about an issue. Yeah, so sometimes we find it very difficult to talk to somebody directly about a problem that's occurring. So we ignore it. We sweep it under the rug. You know, in this case, she would have just, you know, let him take the jewelry and not said, Pete. Yeah. Would that have benefited him? No. And it also wouldn't have benefited the people whose house was next door. So she said, I started saying Tara mantra. Tara is one of the female manifestations of the Buddha. Trusting Tara would show the way. What a blessing that practice is. Since then, I've been thinking a lot about the situation. I can be self-critical and doubt myself. But I'm also seeing how much Dharma practice changes me. Even if I think it's not as good as it could be, you know, so always putting yourself down, thinking my practice should be better. Here I was happy to see that my immediate reaction was not wanting that young man to create destructive karma by stealing the jewelry. Yeah, so her first thought was, you know, he's harming himself through creating the destructive action of stealing. And that harm is going to bring much suffering, you know, on him. So she, you know, her first thought was something about, wow, look what this person's doing, thinking that they'll be happy stealing the jewelry, but actually creating the causes for suffering. I had the confidence, without even thinking, that I would find a way to deal with the situation. Although I was churning inside, I wasn't afraid. Yeah. In such a situation, you know, confronting somebody who has a drug addiction about their stealing, that could be scary to do. Okay. But she said, I wasn't afraid. This young man was in such incredible pain and so desperate. His lies were wacky, crazy, and he couldn't stop himself. Yeah? So she had some compassion for the crazy state of his mind. The best news is that he starts drug rehab on Tuesday, and my friends will go to the police today. He says he needed money because he owes his drug dealer. Of course, we don't know if that is true or not, but regardless, stealing is not the way to repay debts. I've been thinking about the karma that has brought us together, and I've been contemplating the emptiness of the events and of each person involved as a way to release the residual tension in my body and to loosen the mental attachment to the story. A potent afternoon. Okay. So, these are just some stories about how other people use that verse to calm themselves and to help their minds. So now we have a little bit of time for questions and comments, so you can ask what is interesting to you.
Mm-hmm. I'll just make a comment. I've been facing a rough thing with my family, uh-huh. And decided to come up here today, and this is exactly what I needed. I just want to make the comment. My karma just kind of works that way, I guess. I always know you people have the answer for me. So.
Glad to be of service.
I don't know how to put this eloquently, but some people say if you don't react like you're like a robot, because, or non-emotionals, or I'm trying to find the balance of that.
You mean people are saying,
if you're angry, like someone does something to you and everyone else is saying you should be angry.
Yeah, okay.
So it's all because you said to cover it, but deal with it. That's mm-hmm.
Yeah, There's a few things happening here. So you're saying that people say if we don't get angry when some certain events happen, then something's wrong with us. Yeah. Yeah, you hear people say that. I don't think it makes much sense. Okay. Yeah. Because if anger brings you problems, then it's like somebody is saying, if you don't create problems for yourself by getting angry and make yourself unhappy by getting angry, then something's wrong with you. Yeah? And I remember one time, this was many years ago, and I was at a Stephen Levine workshop, and this young man was at the mic, and he was telling this story, trying to put so much emotion in it. You could tell that it was false emotion. And at one point he said, my therapist tells me I need to be angry. And it was like, you know, he was trying so hard to be angry to please his therapist. Yeah, that's not the way to do it. Yeah. So there's a few things. First of all, some people just don't get angry as readily as other people do. And it doesn't mean anything's wrong with them. In fact, it means that they're kind of privileged in not having as much pain and, you know, so many problems as the rest of us who get instantaneously angry. Second of all, you know, not getting angry and like dealing with, you know, using a Dharma method to resolve our anger is not a question of suppressing the anger. You know, suppressing anger clearly isn't healthy. Because it doesn't work, the anger comes out in some other way. But if you can train yourself to look at the situation in a different way, then you don't get angry to start with. Yeah? So other people may not realize that it's possible to actually transform your mind. Yeah, so then they say, well, you know, something's wrong with you if you don't get angry. But it's simply because they don't understand that there's other methods to deal with anger. And that expressing the anger, you know, they don't have any methods to deal with anger. They say express it. But like I said, expressing anger doesn't always get rid of it, does it? Sometimes it makes our anger more intense. So if we can calm our mind, then it's possible to look at the situation and say, okay, what is a useful reaction to the situation? Yeah, is it useful? Is it more useful to go to the person and talk with them about it and be direct? Or is it more useful, because I misinterpreted something, just to let it go? You know, in other words, when our mind is free of the anger, then we can start to think of what useful actions and words are. Okay. Usually when we have a problem, we go to, what do I say, what do I do? And that's not the issue. The first issue is, how do I calm my mind? After we calm our mind, then we look at the situation. What is a useful way to act in this situation that will benefit others and myself?
Because do you feel usually that if you're going to someone, it's all because you just want your voice heard?
Mm-hmm.
Does it really matter?
Yeah.
I feel like that's my way, you know. So
yeah. Okay, so sometimes we want our voice heard. So sometimes we have something valuable to say, you know, and our voice does need to be heard. But not because it's my voice, okay? But sometimes it could be that there's a group of people or even an individual that has the habit of blocking out certain people's voices. And so for that reason, we may need to really say, I don't feel heard and I need to feel heard. Okay? So it's not all, just because people aren't hearing our voice, sometimes it may be egocentric, you know. What I think is so important, you know, they need to hear it. But sometimes it's like, no, the group needs to hear it to change the dynamic in the group and open their minds. Yeah? Okay. The other, yeah.
As you've said, we learn fortitude through the people who might bother us or harm us or annoy us. Mm-hmm. Would you touch on the nature of abuse in the terms of an individual who might be so harmful or so toxic to us? Is there ever a point where we just say, I can no longer learn fortitude from this situation, I need to remove myself? Would you touch briefly on that?
Okay, so situations of abuse, you know. So when our minds are not strong enough to develop fortitude in a situation of abuse, then yes, we should remove ourselves from the situation. There's no reason to stay in a situation and voluntarily let ourselves be abused or let the other person create the destructive karma of abusing others. Yeah. In other situations, you know, when your practice becomes much stronger, you remove yourself from the situation in order to deepen your practice and strengthen your mind. And when you do that, then it's possible to deal with the other person more directly and not be so intimidated or frightened. You know, in which case, then you can act differently in the situation. So we have to assess our own ability. Yeah. But, the thing I think in situations of abuse, what often happens that impedes us is we create an identity of being a victim of abuse. And creating that identity impedes us from growing beyond. Because that's all we are, is a victim of abuse, or a survivor of abuse. And that's who I am, and that's who I forever will be. But no, that's not who we are. Okay? There's no reason to develop that kind of self-image. Okay, so let's sit quietly for a couple of minutes. I call this digestion meditation. So you can think about something that you heard. You know? Think about it, apply it to your life. So this meditation, you're not watching your breath. You're taking some of the things you heard and applying it to situations in your life to see how you can develop fortitude and release anger. dedicate now?
Here to this merit may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind rise.